content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Washington Post. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, I want to remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. As we near the one-year anniversary of when the COVID-19 protocols were put in place to combat the coronavirus pandemic, I thought it might be fun to hear from some travel writers whose articles make no mention of the virus. In some cases, they were written before the virus began making headlines, or the writer simply wanted to get away and forget about the virus, at least for a weekend or so. In our first stop on today's Armchair Traveler, we're going to be soaking up history in Arkansas's Hot Springs National Park. This article was written by Christine Delamore and appeared in the February 7th, 2020 issue of the Washington Post. Now, let me begin with the caption from a photo that accompanied the article. The Fordyce Bathhouse was built in 1915 in the Renaissance Revival style with Spanish and Italian elements. Now home to the National Park's Visitor Center and Museum, the opulent bathhouse was once considered, quote, the finest bathing establishment in the world, unquote, in the words of its creator, Civil War veteran Samuel Fordyce. Now we begin with Miss Delamore's article. I'll just come clean. Baths have never appealed to me. They're time-consuming, and now, with a toddler, just taking a peaceful 3-minute shower is nigh impossible. So I was surprised that my favorite moment of a visit to Arkansas's Hot Springs National Park was soaking in a lavender-scented whirlpool tub, watching ceiling fans turn lazily in the hushed calm of a high-ceilinged, old, century-old bathhouse. It didn't hurt that I was luxuriating in thermal waters, which bubble up from dozens of underground springs in nearby Hot Spring Mountain, and are piped directly into local bathhouses, allowing visitors, as the saying goes, take the waters. Bathing in or drinking the water, a.k.a. quaffing the elixir, has been a public commodity since 1832, when President Andrew Jackson deemed what's now Hot Springs National Park protected land, 40 years before Yellowstone. During the golden era of bathing, that was about 1880 to 1950, the mineral rich H2O, or water, was thought to have medicinal properties, and encouraged by their doctors, the ailing flocked to them for relief from conditions such as arthritis and back pain. At first, accommodations were rudimentary, wooden shacks built atop a gurgling spring, but eventually the water's healing reputation and laws requiring more sanitary and fireproof buildings shaped Hot Springs into a destination nicknamed the American Spa. Its marquee attraction is Bathhouse Row, a collection of 8 imposing stone buildings that line Central Avenue in downtown Hot Springs, each with its own unique architectural style. Of course, these were white, wealthy endeavors. African Americans were mostly banned from using the bathhouses where they worked, forcing them to build their own nearby. What's more, a bathhouse regimen could cost as much as 55 cents, an average worker's daily salary in 1915. The government did provide the needy a free bathhouse, which was later segregated. By 1921, the popularity of Hot Springs, whose baths were said to rival those of ancient Rome, led to its creation as our 18th national park. Yet, as new medicines developed in the 1950s, therapeutic bathing declined and business dried up. By 1985, only the Buckstaff Bathhouse remained open and still is, boasting continuous operation since 1912. But that wasn't the end of Bathhouse Row. The Park Service has restored and repurposed most of the buildings, from Superior, which houses a brewery and the world's only thermal water beer, to the Hale, a luxury hotel, to the Quapaw, a modern spa, to the Ozark, a cultural center and art gallery. The tour de force is the Fordyce Bathhouse, an ornate Renaissance Revival structure built in 1915 that's now home to the National Park's Visitor Center and Museum. Civil War veteran Samuel Fordyce, who was brought to Hot Springs on a stretcher and walked out 6 months later, believed so deeply in the powers of the hot springs that he set out to erect the finest bathing establishment in the world. On our first morning in Hot Springs, myself, my husband, and our 17-month-old son walked the short distance from our grandiose 1924-era hotel, the Arlington, down Magnolia Line Central Avenue to the marble lobby of the Fordyce for a tour. Ranger Kerry Goetz got one thing out of the way. There aren't any outdoor hot springs to bathe in. The water seeps out of the ground at a scalding 143 degrees, which is why the bathhouses control the temperature for bathers at between 98 and 104 degrees. In the men's white-tiled bath hall, Goetz passed around a plastic bottle of thermal water, still warm. "You're holding history in your hands," he said, explaining the water fell as rainwater 4,000 years ago and is just now rising to the surface via a complex geothermal process occurring within the rock layers under our feet. Goetz then took us through a 1900s-era day at the bathhouse, first soaking in the tub while an attendant scrubs your back and limbs, then being wrapped in hot towels called hot packs. Next, a few minutes in the vapor or steam cabinet, sort of like an outdoor-shaped sauna, or outhouse-shaped sauna, I should say, and then a dip in the sitz bath, a bidet-like structure said to soothe hemorrhoids, and finally the needle shower, in which pressurized jets hit you with water all over. The oddest contraption, and Goetz's absolute favorite, is the long-defunct hydrotherapy bathtub, in which an attendant stuck an electric probe in the bathwater, issuing shocks to supposedly relax tight muscles or activate non-functioning ones. Our tour ended in the men's dressing room, where a stained glass skylight depicts Neptune's daughter and other underwater whimsies in striking blues and greens. A statue of 16th-century Spanish explorer Hernando de Soto, receiving a gift of thermal water from an American Indian, sits at the center of the room. It's unlikely he ever did, but it sure helped with advertising, Goetz said. The Quapaw and Godot peoples lived there for thousands of years, mining the region's ubiquitous novosilite, a type of flintstone, for weapons. We wandered the rest of the museum, from the women's bath hall, their dressing room was much less fancy, to the sunny third-floor assembly room, where the conservative Edwardian-era men and women mingled amid an opulence of mosaic tile floors, a grand piano, and decorative stained-glass ceilings. I was miffed to read men were permitted to sunbathe nude in the third-floor courtyard, where women had to exercise informal lace dresses. Down the hall, a large hardwood floor gymnasium may have attracted bathers hoping to see famous baseball players in town for spring training, which originated in Hot Springs in the 1880s. Indeed, many well-known men, notorious and otherwise, passed through Hot Springs, including Babe Ruth and Al Capone. "This was Vegas before Vegas was even dreamed of," Goetz told me. Pick your vice. Across the street from the elegant bathhouse row, cocaine dens, brothels, gambling establishments, and clubs thrived. Capone kept tabs on his favorite casino, the Southern Club, now the Josephine Tussaud Wax Museum, from the window of his fourth-floor suite in the Arlington. Speaking of Scarface, he also regularly took the waters and may have used the alias Al Brown to bathe on Bathhouse Road, though there are no records, of course. He also frequented the Arlington's third-floor bathhouse, where I checked into my 2 p.m. appointment feeling a little nervous. Would it be weird being rubbed down by a stranger? I needn't have worried. Attendant Glenda Porter, a 31-year employee, put me instantly at ease. After giving me a quick loofah scrub in the porcelain tub, she wrapped me in a sheet, toga-like, and instructed me to lie down on a lounge chair in the main bath hall, covering me head to toe in steamy towels. The heavy cloth immobilized my limbs, the whirlpool baths churned pleasantly in the background, and with no smartphone or other distractions, I was forced to succumb to the present. Aha, I thought. Now I get it. The water's medical benefit may be questionable, but the soothing impact on my mind was anything but. The next afternoon at Backstaff, I entered another beautiful marble lobby, where an attendant brought me into an old hand-operated elevator for a ride to the second floor. Though less spa-like, no fragrant bath salts available, with the tub soak, for instance, this bathhouse experience was more authentic as I got to try a Stitz bath, sitz bath, I should say, that's spelled S-I-T-Z, vapor cabinet, and needle shower. Now, the sitz bath was underwhelming, but I enjoyed the novelty of the vapor cabinet, where I sat sweating with my head in a wooden yoke. The needle shower was invigorating, the water reviving muscles made rubbery in the hot steams of the vapor cabinet. Refreshed, we explored more of Hot Springs, which, as the second smallest national park, Gateway Arch, edged it out in 2018, is compact and easy to navigate. At Hot Water Cascade, a waterfall near our hotel, tendrils of steam rose from the water as it tumbled down the rocks, prompting a chorus of wah-wah, or water, from my son. We strolled the Grand Promenade, a red brick path above Bathhouse Row, and a conduit to some of the park's 26 miles of hiking trails on Hot Springs Mountain and North Mountain. At the town's jug fountains, locals queued to fill bottles of thermal water. The public consumes about 700,000 gallons a day. "Good?" I asked one woman. "I wouldn't be wasting all this energy hauling if it weren't," she said, laughing. Driving back to the Little Rock Airport the next morning, a regret popped into my mind. Maybe I shouldn't have sold that antique clawfoot bathtub that came with my apartment. I could use a good soak now and then. By the way, Christine Delamore is a writer based in Washington, D.C., and you can follow her on Twitter at C. Delamore. That's at the letter C and then D-E-L-A-M-O-R-E, at C. Delamore. Wow. Lots of fun, huh? And sounds like a great place to visit there in Hot Springs. Now, she does have a little list of travel tips if you'd like to go down there to Hot Springs and where to stay. Well, she recommends the Arlington Hotel located at 239 Central Avenue. Check them out online at arlingtonhotel.com/. It's the largest hotel in Arkansas. This southern treasure features a grand lobby and elegant Venetian dining room. You can try the mineral water room, whose bathtub features thermal water straight from the hot springs. Now, standard rates for two adults start at $135. Mineral water room begins at $179 per night. Places to eat? Well, she's going to suggest the Superior Bathhouse Brewery at 329 Central Avenue. They have a website, superiorbathhouse.com. That's superiorbathhouse.com. Located in one of the historic bathhouses, this is the first brewery in a U.S. national park. The Hitchcock Spring Kolsch is delicious. Pair it with a soft pretzel and the Kolsch-infused beer cheese. And you can go in there starting at 11 a.m. on a daily basis. Entrees begin at $9. And as far as things to do, well, there's the Hot Springs National Park at 101 Reserve Street. Check them out at nps.gov/HOSP/. Again, that's nps.gov/HOSP/. You can relax in thermal waters piped right from the hot springs, hike through rare shortleaf pine forest, or look out over the rolling Ouachita Mountains from the 216-foot-tall Hot Springs Mountain Tower. Daily ranger tours take visitors through the various bathing and medical facilities of the luxurious Fordyce Bathhouse, as well as to the park's visible hot springs, where they explain geologic processes behind the mineral water. Free park admission and tours. That makes it kind of fun. The Gangster Museum of America is another suggestion. It's at 510 Central Avenue. Check that out at tgmoa.com/. That's tgmoa.com/. Get the lowdown on Hot Springs' seamier side in this museum, whose audiovisual galleries explore the lives of famous criminals in the Valley of the Vapors. Highlights include John Dillinger's death mask and original gambling equipment from a Prohibition-era speakeasy, including roulette tables. It's open daily, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., Sunday to Thursday, and 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., Friday and Saturday. General admission is $15 for adults, $14 for seniors, and $6 for children 8 to 12. More information about Hot Springs can be found at arkansas.com/. That's arkansas.com/. Well, next, writer Christina Lenzito shares how she and her family used a weekend getaway to overcome a habit that plagues many people here and abroad, being tethered to our cell phones. Now, her article in West Virginia, My Family Tried to Connect with the Land and Disconnect from Our Devices, appeared in the September 4th, 2019 issue of the Washington Post. The negotiations begin after my husband Dante, our two teenage kids, and I pack ourselves into a car and head out of town on a recent Friday afternoon. Cell phones stay in airplane mode, only to be used for music listening or photo taking. No grown-ups obsessively checking their work emails, reading headlines, or scrolling through Twitter. And no kids texting friends, watching inexplicable YouTube videos, often of other people playing video games, or trying to capture Pokemon. If all goes according to plan, this weekend will be about connecting with one another instead. Because sometimes it seems awfully hard to juggle both digital and family interactions without compromising something meaningful. We're on our way to West Virginia for a low-tech weekend at Lost River State Park, promisingly named, given our mission, just across the Virginia border in Mathias, West Virginia. I've chosen it not only because the park sounds beautiful, with lots of hiking trails, but because the cell phone service is spotty at best here. Now, plus, I've been told that the cabin we'll be staying in has no Wi-Fi, which will prevent the intrusions of work, school, social obligations, and politics. The average American checks their phone 80 times a day while on vacation, says Tiffany Schlein, author of 24/6, The Power of Unplugging One Day a Week. You look at your phone, she says, and there's going to be something that stresses you out, whether it's an email, a text, a news headline, something that's going to take you out of being in that moment. Right now, Dante B., 14, isn't very pleased to be in this particular moment. In the back seat, I hear him mumbling, I don't like this. I just don't like this whole thing. After stopping for burgers at the laid-back Lost River Grill about 15 minutes outside the park, we head 5 miles down a winding road through the woods to the entrance and administrative building. An envelope with our key and instructions is taped to the front door. We're in a legacy cabin, one of 15 in the park that were constructed in the 1930s with a wooden frame and logs by the Depression-era Civilian Conservation Corps. Now, it's perfect. 2 bedrooms, a little living room, and a bathroom. The fully equipped kitchen has a bread box on the table where we all agree to stash our phones whenever we're in the cabin. The bread box of modernity, we call it. I read through the short welcome note in the envelope indicating a payphone on the front porch of the administration building for your convenience, and handwritten in pen at the bottom, a Wi-Fi password. Turns out they wired up the place 2 weeks before our arrival, says Samuel England, chief of the West Virginia State Park System. When I call him after the trip to ask about this surprising amenity, he says, people feel like they need to stay connected when they're on vacation, but I make no mention of it to my family. That night, we played the board games we've packed, a few that had been stored unused in a living room cabinet for years. They include Cards Against Humanity, a party game where one person reads a question from a set of cards and the others offer one of their response cards, trying to come up with the funniest answer. I realize mid-game that some of the questions are R-rated or worse, but I can't remember the last time we've laughed so hard together. The next morning, we explore Lost River State Park, a gloriously quiet spread of about 3,900 acres. Its most beautiful hike may be the 3.5-mile Miller's Rock Trail, which leads to an overlook with an expansive view of tiny, tiny towns, fields, and mountains. Nobody stops to check their phones for new text or emails along the way because we can't. Instead, we chat about the possibility of a bear sighting, highly unlikely, or enjoy the silence. In the afternoon, we drive south to Seneca Rocks. The magnificent rocky tower of white-gray Tuscarora quartzite, rising 900 feet above the North Fork River in Monongahela National Forest. We climb the 1.3-mile trail up steps and switchbacks for 700 feet to the top, impressed by the handful of rock climbers we can see scaling the peak the hard way. While we walk, I chat with my 16-year-old daughter, Mia, who says she thinks society has a problem with cell phone addiction. I try to talk to my friends at lunch, and a lot of times they're just looking at their phones, she notes, adding that she sometimes wishes she didn't have a phone, or much better, that no one had one. After lunch at the nearby Front Porch Restaurant, we head off to the Greenbank Observatory, home to the Greenbank Telescope, used to gather radio data from space. It's the reason the surrounding 13,000 square mile area, most of it state and national forest, is labeled the National Radio Quiet Zone, where radio transmissions are limited to prevent disruptions to the telescope's reception, though only the approximately 150 people closest to the observatory aren't allowed Wi-Fi or in some cases even microwaves. We're given a bus tour of the grounds and background on the massive 17-million-pound telescope and how scientists there work in part on finding signs of life beyond Earth. We're all too tired for games when we finally get back to the cabin. Mia points out that we were so busy, it wasn't such a challenge to ignore her phone. My husband says he's been surprised by how many times he's reached for his pocket to check his email throughout the day and stopped himself several times an hour, he notes. It makes me realize how it's basically become a robotic habit. I've been the same way. It's almost unconscious impulse whenever there's a moment of downtime. It makes me want to retrain myself to be comfortable with a little boredom, if that's what a lack of digital stimuli is these days. On Sunday, as we head home, we do a postmortem. We didn't check our emails or post photos or on our scroll through social media all weekend. Countless Pokemon went uncaught, friends and family went untexted, and all the maps we consulted were of paper. I think we should do a trip like this every year, Dottie B says, putting on his earbuds as we near home, but I'm going to listen to a podcast now. Great ending, huh? By the way, she has some if-you-go tips. First of all, the Castaway Caboose in Durban. You can board the Durban Rocket, a steam train that drops off you and your family. It's a fully renovated Wabash Railroad caboose with bathroom facilities and fridge and cooking area. It's in a remote area by the Greenbrier River with no cell service. The caboose holds up to 6 people, $330 for the first night, $225 for the second night, $190 for the night number 3. More information at mountainrailwv.com, mountainrailwv.com. Then we have the Lost River State Park at Mathias. The park has 4-person legacy cabins that range from $109 to $119 per a night, Sunday through Thursday, and then $119 to $139 on Friday and Saturday. There are also legacy cabins for 2, 3, 6, and 8 people. There are 11 other classic or vacation cabins with more modern construction that are available year-round. Cell service is unreliable. Cabins are wired for Wi-Fi, though if the password ends up in the campfire, so be it. You can check it all out at wvstateparks.com. That's wvstateparks.com. Then we have the Big Bend Campground, or known as Cabins, this seriously off-the-grid campground in the gorgeous Smoke Hole Canyon in Monongahela National Forest, is a favorite for fishing. It sits by the south branch of the Potomac River and hiking. It's got 46 sites available from April through late October. The camping fees range from $22 to $40 a night, with bathroom and shower facilities. Learn more at recreation.gov, recreation.gov. By the way, our writer, Christina Lanzito, is an editor also, and she's based in Washington, D.C., and we certainly enjoy her travel tips. And from time to time on Armchair Traveler, we feature articles from the New York Times ongoing series, The World Through a Lens. So we're going to turn from the Washington Post now to the Times. These articles are written by their photographers who share unique travel experiences that they photograph during their journeys. Today we feature photographer Scott Baker. Now, as his introduction explains, having traveled to Alabama to wait out the coronavirus pandemic, a photographer reassesses his relationship with his childhood and his hometown, his article appearing in the May 28, 2020 issue of the New York Times. Let's see what he learned. With travel restrictions in place worldwide, we're turning to our photojournalists to help transport you virtually to some of our planet's most beautiful and intriguing places. In this installment of The World Through a Lens, Scott Baker is going to share a collection of photographs from his hometown in Alabama, and these are the notes that accompany his photos. In March, decades after I'd moved away, I returned to my hometown in Alabama to wait out the coronavirus pandemic. Growing up here, I couldn't wait to leave. In those days, Alexander City in east central Alabama was a mill town dominated by Russell Corporation, the maker of athletic apparel. Everyone I knew worked at the mill or was tied to it in one way or another. Things moved slowly then. There was little to do. I spent much of my childhood wandering the county, hiking in the woods and canoeing down rivers and creeks. On weekends, Dad and I roamed aimlessly in his old pickup truck, seeing where the old dirt roads might lead us. When I'd ask if he knew where we were going, he'd say, "We'll end up somewhere." Life in Alabama didn't feel especially rewarding to me then. Instead, I preferred dreaming of escape, determined to see and experience the world. I spent hours dragging my fingertips over a globe that sat in my family's den. I never imagined I'd return for any length of time. And yet here I am, home again unexpectedly, just like so many others. Far-flung destinations and photo assignments are off the calendar for now, but my urge to explore hasn't abated. So instead of trekking through Patagonia or photographing the ruins at Angkor Archaeological Park in Cambodia, I'm once again riding in the back roads of my childhood, photographing familiar farms and taking boat rides on Lake Martin. For many years, I was hesitant to tell people where I was from. I was worried it might conjure preconceptions of racial prejudice or ultra-conservatism. I was worried they might think of my hometown as provincial. During the last few months, though, that preemptive defensiveness has washed away, and I can't help but see the beauty of this place. Unlike in the 70s, most of the roads are now paved, and many of the barns that stood straight during my childhood are now leaning with age. But the farms are as bucolic as ever, and the lake is still teeming with boats. I've even grown to appreciate the area's slow, peaceful pace. Tallapoosa County, which encompasses my hometown and much of Lake Martin, is sparsely populated. I can explore for hours without the risk of social interaction. Many of the farms in the area, featuring fertile land with rolling hills and wildflowers, are old homesteads owned by single families for several generations. My work as a photographer has taken me all over the world, to more than 25 countries and most of the American states. Traveling has given me many things, an appreciate for disparate people and cultures, a greater capacity for tolerance and love. But perhaps its greatest gift is the way it's encouraged me to seek new perspectives, even when glancing at my own backyard. All over America, people are reevaluating big city life. Things that seemed inconceivable 3 months ago, like returning to live in one's quiet hometown, are now distinct possibilities. Present circumstances have given rise to a new set of internal negotiations and assessments. In a newfound way, or I should say in a way my newfound fulfillment here is hard to account for. Maybe I have less to prove. Maybe the looming threat of COVID-19 has made me more appreciative. Maybe these images are an atonement for the many years I've spent not fully acknowledging my birthplace. Or maybe I'm finally aware that my early years in Alabama are not and never were a liability. And today, photographer Scott Baker is based in Miami Beach, Florida. And by the way, you can follow his work on Instagram at Scott Baker. And he does a lot of different things for the Times, quite good stuff for his travel columns and so forth. So I would encourage you maybe to follow Scott and others as we continue to offer these Through the Lens series that the New York Times has been publishing. My friends, we have come to the end of today's journey of Armchair Traveler. We hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll join us again next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I'm reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, providing you the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. The number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.